From Relay FM, this is Connected, episode 90. Today's show is brought to you by Memories. My name is Mike Hurley, and I am joined by Mr. Stephen Hackett. Hello, Stephen Hackett.
Hello, Michael Hurley.
And ciao, Federico Vitici.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Why are you saying ciao? What's the occasion?
I like to localize, you know?
Oh, yeah? You do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Talking about localizing, whenever I sell t-shirts now, I like to localize to the US or Europe so people don't have to pay high shipping rates. Oh, yes, ladies and gentlemen, new Connected t-shirt time.
Yeah.
They look amazing. We have a link, a special link in our show notes. If you go to our show notes, Federico, where can people find the show notes?
They can go to relay.fm/connected/90.
And you will see a lovely link to our t-shirt. You'll be able to click that. And if you are in the US or Europe or whichever you're closest to, they will be the t-shirts will be shipping from that region. So you'll be able to get better prices. They're not all shipping from the US as we've done in the past. We've worked with Teespring, who've been great, and they've been able to hook us up with that. So there are two parallel campaigns, but if you click that link, it will just automatically throw you to the right one, and you'll be able to get a fantastic t-shirt. It is to celebrate Stephen collecting all of the iMacs, which we'll talk about in a little bit. He collected all of the iMacs, all 13, and we have created a t-shirt which kind of also riffs on the meetup poster that our designer Frank made for us. We loved it so much, we decided to have a Stephen made. And then once we had a Stephen made, we decided to have a bunch of iMacs made. These t-shirts are basically commemorative items because there's so much involved in the printing that we're basically making no money on them.
Yeah.
But we love this design so much, and I hope that you will all love it and you should buy it. And if I see anybody at WWDC wearing this, they will get a big hug.
Yes.
Maybe from all three of us.
I'll give you an iMac.
I got loads of them, man. I just bring them down.
Yeah, and a lot of people, including you, Mike, told me that on the t-shirt I look like Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, which
it's
is
true.
Great. It's very nice. And for some reason, Frank used a t-shirt that I actually have, but he didn't know that I have that exact t-shirt in my
no, he knows everything.
Collection.
He knows everything.
Yeah. It kind of that character kind of does look like me. So yeah,
these t-shirts are a limited design. They're available until the 19th of May, and we tried to get them out as soon as possible. And because we have the localized shipping, if you're kind of in Central Europe, the UK, or in the continental United States, probably Canada, you should have these just in time for WWDC if you're coming. If you're not, doesn't even matter, but they're great. They're gray, they're blue. You can choose which one. You should buy both, like I did. And enjoy them because they're awesome. Thank you very much. All right, so Stephen.
Yes.
You wanted to talk about 90th anniversary gifts, I see in our thing here.
We've been doing this as we hit bigger and bigger numbers on Connected. Mm-hmm. And so I just felt like it would be wrong to skip over this. So for you, Mike, the traditional gift in the United Kingdom is, quote, stone. I don't know what that means. You're going to get some rocks.
Or get stoned.
I don't think that's what
it
means.
Is that not what it is? I mean, if you're 90 years old, I feel like that's probably okay, but...
Oh, yeah. If I make it to 90, it's going to be game over. every other country on this website, US, Spain, Germany, Russia, France, and Italy, granite is the gift. And then as far as gemstones, emerald is the rock of choice for the 90th anniversary club. So
basically some kind of stone with an emerald in the middle, and we're all good.
I think that's pretty good. So I know people were dying to know what that would be, so I felt like I had an obligation to fulfill their curiosity.
Perfect. But more importantly, you have collected all of your iMacs now. You have all 13 iMacs.
I do. They're actually 16, which is a funny story, but I have one of each color.
It's probably not that funny.
No, it's just that I had some bum ones that I replaced. But yeah, so all 13 are here. I've put together a page that'll be in the show notes a project page on 512 Pixels that has basically links to all the other stuff I'm doing. So there's, I did a big blog post with like high res, like product photos that you can go and play with. Like someone on Twitter told me they were making a poster out of one of them. Like go do with them as you wish. They are yours to play with. And there's a YouTube video, which I put up of the, basically me doing the photo shoot, which was a lot of fun. And, there's a bunch more coming. So I think I'll highlight those as we go, but we are off to the races as far as exciting content for an 18-year-old computer.
Exciting yeah.
content.
I love the video that you did, and it's kind yep. of... I assume that was the video which resulted in the photography, right?
Yes. So the pictures that I'm taking in that video are the pictures you can download in the blog post.
Yeah, I like it a lot because you get to... I like... There's a subtle thing that you may or may not notice when you watch the video, how the colors change during the time lapse.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite clever.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just... I had fun making it. It was fun to do a bunch of time lapse stuff. And I like, too, that it's a lot of, like, behind the scenes. Like, you can see how messy our office is right now. But it is sort of funny if you look at the video. The first little bit is me setting up a light... that actually, it happens in the time lapse, but it's so fast you can't see it. Actually cut the back of my, like, two of my fingers open, setting that light up, which is exciting, a little tidbit of information.
Real behind the scenes here.
Yeah, and you can see to the right, like, there's, like, backpacks and stuff packed up. So I make movies about old computers. My brother is going to Africa to shoot a documentary this summer. And so, like, we share this space and do, like, the most opposite things in it that you could think of.
Yeah, but who's doing the real important work here, you know?
I would say that it's him. But, it was a lot of fun making it. I think people seem to be enjoying it. So yeah, there's a lot more coming.
I've got to say, when you started off on this, I thought it was kind of crazy. And whilst it is still crazy, I am becoming more and more interested in it.
Oh, thanks, man. That's good. I was telling you guys before we recorded what this project is. Like, this is the byproduct of me not having anyone to answer to anymore. Like, if I have all the time and, like, you know, I spent some money on this. It wasn't real expensive. Like I said in the video, like, half of these were donated by listeners and readers, which is awesome. Thank you so much. But, like, this is what happens when I work for myself, like, without any checks and balances, that just I do a 13 computers and have a video about them. But people seem to be enjoying it. I've got a lot of great response. It's a lot of fun to hear from people about their stories of this computer, and I think it is an important computer. So it's a lot of fun exploring some new ways to kind of tell people about it.
Yeah, you are the iMac man now.
Seems that way.
So last week we spoke about the Logitech base for the iPad Pro, and Jason Snell of Six Colors and Upgrade. he got one of these and wrote a little review of it. And, you know, Jason overall seems pretty positive about this device, I guess you'd call it. But basically what his main... He has kind of two main complaints, which I completely feel would definitely stop me from buying this, is the viewing angle is kind of okay, but you can't adjust it naturally, right? So you're kind of just stuck with what it is. But the biggest one for me is taking the smart cover, you know, we spoke about this last time, off every single time is frustrating.
Yeah, and it just looks like a strange product to me that we waited all of these months for a second smart connector accessory to come out, and it's just a base where you connect the iPad and you cannot do anything else. There's no fancy like solution for like an audio enhancer type of like acoustic sort of shell. There's no pencil holder for the iPad Pro. It's just a base. You cannot adjust the angle. I mean, it looks terrific. It looks very nice. And I can imagine, like, in some scenarios, like, you're a designer working at a desk. You don't need to adjust the angle, which I doubt, but it's possible. Or maybe, like, what do they call those iPads in a museum? Like a kiosk or something? Yeah. I could imagine that, but it looks like, I mean, if you want to use an iPad Pro in a museum with a Logitech base, I mean, it must be a real fancy museum, but sure. I mean, I could imagine the big iPad Pro, 13 inches almost, it makes sense. It looks very nice, but it's mostly a disappointment for me because I wanted to see a little more.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really fully the more I think about this, I can't really understand what you would use it for, right? Like, yeah, like in neither. An artist's perspective, like, you wouldn't want it at that angle. Like, I can't really imagine people using it. Like, maybe you would put it in here and type on an external keyboard, maybe? I don't know, you know. So, like, you, Federico, just bought your Magic keyboard, which you're going to get to in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Would you maybe want to put your iPad in this and then type with it? Or would you want to put it on something else? Or would you just leave, like, the smart cover on and just stand it up on that thing?
I don't need to buy this because I can just leave it on the smart cover. It's one less thing to have around my house. You know, the smart cover is perfectly fine for my preferred viewing angle when typing. So
yeah.
It looks nice. Again, it looks very nice, but I don't need it.
Yeah, I've got to say, like in actual usage, like I don't really get this so much anymore. Like, it's on paper just seemed like a nice product. Like, oh, this is a cool thing that someone's doing with a stand, but there kind of isn't really a lot to it.
Yeah, I wonder, and I was talking with Jason about this, I wonder if it's a problem of the smart connector, the first revision being not offering a lot of control to manufacturers, or if maybe we'll see a software update that will unlock more functionalities in the smart connector, or if there has to be a hardware revision, because it's kind of odd that in 7 months, we've only seen essentially two accessories for this new connector. From third parties, which happen to be the same company. So it's the Logitech Create keyboard case and the Logitech base. And of course, the smart keyboard from Apple. And when I reviewed the iPad Pro, I was told we'll have more international layouts for the smart keyboard soon. And I wonder if 7 months lies within the soon threshold. I doubt it. So it's kind of strange, you know, that 7 months on, we've only got one American keyboard layout for the smart keyboard from Apple and only two third-party accessories for the smart connector, which come from the same company. So, you know, it's kind of odd.
It is strange. Yeah. On keyboards. So what do you think about the Magic Keyboard?
I love it. It's definitely the best keyboard I've bought in many, many years, actually. And I'm surprised why I didn't consider this before. Like, what was I thinking? So the size is just right for me. The size of the keys, the size of the distance between each key works for me. I do love how they sound, how they click. So I don't understand what some people hate. I guess.
I think it depends what you're coming from.
Yeah.
Because it clicks less, right?
Yeah, some people really do love their clicks, like deep clicking keyboards. And I understand that. But it works for me. I love the sound. It's super comfortable. And it seems even easier to connect to the iPad. So I used to... What was it called? The Apple wireless keyboard a few years ago? I used to have one of those back in the days of my iPad 2 and the iPad 3. And it was always a mess to connect to it. You needed to go into the Bluetooth settings because it got stuck. Now there's a switch on the Magic Keyboard, which I like. It's easy to turn off and on. And one of the things that I miss from the dedicated iPad keyboards is the standalone iPad keys, like a shortcut key, a screenshot key, a home screen key. And I know that I can go back to the home screen by hitting Command H.
Yeah, that's how I live my life.
Yeah, it's just easier to go back with a standalone key, for me at least. But other than that, I really, really do like it. I'm only just wondering, I think I gotta buy some kind of cleaning product because it's white and I know how it's gonna end up when I spend the entire summer writing on it. And I don't know what Apple recommends when it comes to cleaning white keyboards. So I gotta look that up. But I'm very happy with the purchase. It works well with the smart cover. I just prop the iPad up and I type. And I also miss the, you know, it's on the Logitech keyboards. And other keyboards. But on the Logitech One, you get this globe key to switch between keyboards. You get like a little pop-up in the middle of the screen. I don't remember if there's a similar shortcut to do the same on the Magic Keyboard. And another thing that I noticed is that in iOS 9, there's still, iOS 9.3 even, there's still some weird keyboard inconsistencies. Like sometimes Command Tab doesn't work. I need to perform it again like twice or three times for it to work. Like it gets stuck for some reason, or like some other weird bug, like the caps lock key gets also stuck. So when it's off, I type uppercase. When it's on, I type lowercase, which is confusing, and I need to disconnect and connect again. So there's still some oddities in keyboards in iOS 9. But overall, I give it a solid 85%. Were you looking for an approval rate, Mike?
Yes.
It's 85%.
That's good. That's actually, I think most people will be pretty happy with that kind of approval rating.
Yeah.
Two things. I put a knowledge base article in the show notes what Apple said, how Apple says to clean it.
Oh, thank you.
I will give full credit to Kyle's the Gray in the chat room. He pasted it there basically the same moment I pasted it into Quip, so we'll give him credit. And two, I've used the Magic Keyboard since its debut, and out of the generations of Apple Keyboard I have at my disposal, it's really one of my favorites, if not my favorite. The key throw, took a little getting used to. It's not as shallow as something like the MacBook. But one of my favorite things, honestly, and I guess you don't get this really with the iPad, is the being able to charge it over Lightning. So like actually today I came into the office and my keyboard was like 4%. I had a notification on my computer and I just unplugged the Lightning cable I usually have on my phone and just put it over here on the keyboard. You don't have to worry about dealing with AA batteries and all that sort of stuff. So I'm a big fan of this little keyboard.
Yeah, I think the battery thing is good. That's why one of the reasons that I love the new Magic Trackpad, for the same reason, right? Like, I love it because I can just charge it by Lightning, and I have a gajillion Lightning cables now, just like all over the place, so it's easy for me to just grab one and charge it. So I can totally see why you would want that for the keyboard, right? For the same reason. But as I said before, like, that keyboard just... it's fine for me, but I much prefer when I'm using my Mac to use the Microsoft one because it's more comfortable for me. And then when I'm using my iPad, I'm happy with the Smart Keyboard because I can kind of maneuver it in a way that I can get comfortable quite easily, but it's also always there. That's what I like about it, right? Yeah. But I totally see, like, for the reason that you have bought it, Federico, makes perfect sense for you, because as I said to you last week, you should not be typing those 10,000 words on the screen, because it just can't be good for you.
I wish they were 10,000.
Sometimes there's only 10.
Yeah. I'll probably bring the Smart Keyboard to San Francisco, just because it's a all-in-one kind of solution. It's easier to carry. But I think I did the right thing in buying the Magic Keyboard for this summer, And it's also very nice how I can look up the battery information in the Notification Center widget, which I also get with the... I don't get it with the Smart Keyboard because it uses Smart Connector. I get it with the Beats headphones.
And the Pencil.
And the Pencil. So it's nice. The only thing that worries me is the white color and... and the way that it will get dirty over time. So I will thank you, Steven and Kyle, for sending me the link. I will look up the Apple recommended cleaning methodology.
It really doesn't get real bad. I mean, unless you're... Okay. I sort of have a bad habit of eating at my desk, like for lunch. You'll get food and stuff on it. But like in general use, like this one at my office, I've had up here for 9 months. And like it... I mean, looking at it now, like, it seems fine. Like, they're pretty durable.
All right.
Unless you're just really dirty. Are you really dirty?
No, not at my desk.
This week's episode is brought to you by Memories. Memories, the corners of my mind. Do you ever remember the EverPix flashback feature that everybody loved? We loved that, right? Like, you could go back and see things that had happened in your past. It's the one that Picture Life quickly implemented. And now I think Picture Life is going the way of the Dodo too. I think that was recent news that I saw somewhere, right? Picture Life is going away. I know Casey was upset. So now Memories for iOS gives you that feature for the photos that live in your iCloud photo library. This isn't going to be something that's cast to the shadows that you can find prompt.photos. Do you remember that? I just saw Kyle put that in the chat room. This isn't going to happen with Memories because it's just taking the photos that you have in your iCloud photo library and it shows you them sort of what you did a year ago, right? So it will group them up. You can see it together by years and you can very easily go in and see, like, on this day in the past, what did I do? You can travel back in time and revisit those old photos that you might otherwise never see again and get that little hit of the memory right to the feel center. You can get a notification each day to tell you how many memories you have that day, and you can quickly see them in a lovely Today View widget as well, so you don't even need to open the app. They'll be right there whenever you need them. And if you want to see a specific date, you can very easily just pick that date. They have a great date picker in there. Memories makes it also easy to share these photos, and if you've come across some that you'd rather forget, it's really easy to remove them from the app as well. Go to memories.land/connected to find out more and check it out for yourself. Thank you so much to Memories for their support of this show.
I do like how epic it sounds when you say that the show is brought to you by Memories. Like, it just sounds...
It's nice, right? Awesome.
It's a super cool app.
Yeah, I like it. I've been playing with it and I like it a lot. It's great. So you should go check it out.
Have you found any photos that you'd like to forget about, Mike?
Most.
So let's go from photo management to music streaming services.
I feel like there needs to be a big disclaimer before we talk about this. It is not our intention to kill Apple Music or to kill Spotify. Mm-hmm. You know, just want to make sure that people don't say that we jinxed it or that we're bad luck or whatever. It's just a rumor. We're just reporting. No, it's not a curse. It's a set of unlucky coincidences. It's not our fault.
So I figure if we break down the news, I'll let you guys talk about it since you guys actually use this stuff more than I do. A article came out in Bloomberg, which, like, as a sidebar, Bloomberg is killing it with the Apple coverage recently. They have a big article saying that sweeping changes are coming to Apple Music as soon as WWDC, which of course is really, as we speak today, only about a month away, and that this is going to be sort of a twofold change, a big user interface change to make it more intuitive, that would better integrate online radio and music downloads, and that it would also, according to a 9 to 5 article, so these things are kind of coming at the same thing from two different directions, that it would be a big change for the For You tab and the new tab, and apparently iTunes Connect is still there, you know, the Connect tab that would potentially be going away. And that all this is being spearheaded, and this is really the paragraph that is troubling to me, is that the new look is being overseen by like 18 people, including
Robert Kondrick. I don't know how you say that name.
Kondrick.
Trent Reznor, Johnny Ive, and Eddie Q and Ivine. So everyone, really.
It's a bunch of people, and it seems like a little bit of design by committee, which we can get to. But I think the big headline is here that Apple Music, just a year in, seems to be, at least, slated for big changes. You know, this isn't just like, oh, we're just going to tweak something. Like, if all this comes true, this is like major surgery, you know, on a service that's 12 months old.
Yeah, but a lot of, I look at this, you say like, oh, Bloomberg are killing it. And, you know, they definitely had the article, but this news came during a week where lots of people were complaining about Apple Music. So Apple saying to Bloomberg, oh, hey, we're changing so much, like, feels like a thing that might happen. So, you know, lots of people were upset this week about Apple Music deleting music. There was
Happened to you guys, by the way?
I don't have a local music library that I have really cared about and taken care of over the last few years. I moved to streaming years ago. So all of my music is sitting on a hard drive, but it's not on my machine.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I'm the same. Yeah.
So, I mean, Stephen, I don't think you've really got into the situation where it would be a problem for you because...
Right. I do have iTunes Match turned on, which I let lapse, but I've actually re-updated because it actually is helpful. But I'm not using Apple Music. We do have a Spotify account now, mainly for the Amazon Echo, so we can just shout at it to play something, because the Amazon Prime Music library is pretty hit or miss. But I think the background noise right now is that Apple Music, I think especially on the Mac, because they really, like, as janky as the iOS Music app can be, where they sort of glued music.app and Beats together, like in iTunes on the Mac, it's even worse. And so there's a lot of like just low level dissatisfaction with how this is working right now from at least the tech community.
The idea of making big user interface changes is not something that surprises me with a service like this. You know, like Apple, in the way that they do, they just put it out there, and then every year we'll make big changes to it. Like Spotify just did some changes in the background to their UI, but they just do them whenever they want to do them, right? And they make these small changes which might last over a year. So the idea of Apple doing one release every year and it making big user interface changes doesn't surprise me, because they put it out there. Lots of people didn't like the way that a bunch of things worked, so now they're going to be changing them in the next version. I don't think that these sweeping changes are going to be as big as the Bloomberg article says. You know, making things more intuitive doesn't mean that they need to basically rip the guts out and start all over again. Reorganizing some tabs and changing the names of them, you know, changing the For You tab a little bit more, making that a bit better, and discontinuing the new tab, calling it Browse, and showing all the same stuff in a different way. Like,
yeah,
none of this is huge. It just feels like changes that need to be made.
Yeah.
And the idea of getting rid of Connect as well, like, that's a good idea, and they're saying it's going to be rolled into the For You tab. But again, it's like these just feel like a big collection of small changes, as opposed to, like, we started over again.
No, they cannot start over, realistically. I mean, yeah. The streaming infrastructure is there. And what else is to change about Beats 1, but, you know, adding new shows? And the reports from Bloomberg and 9to5Mac don't even mention Beats 1, so it seems like it'll stay mostly unchanged. So the sweeping changes that Bloomberg refers to sound to me like they're changing the color scheme of the interface. They're reorganizing a bunch of areas of the app. So it's more of a cleanup, or more of a, you know, restructuring, but it's not a sweeping change. It's not like Apple Music is turning into Spotify all of a sudden, you know? Mm-hmm. So it sounds like what we should expect from Apple, and this is a sort of a pattern that we've seen with other apps. The design changes once a year, the feature additions throughout the releases of iOS and OS X. This is, if you look at Notes, if you look at OS X and other apps, if you look at, you know, stuff like Safari, we're seeing design once a year, features throughout the year, which I think makes sense. And I think we'll see these design changes with Apple Music at WWDC. And it, judging especially from the 9to5Mac article, it sounds like they're doing away with the artwork influencing the background of the app. So if you open like an album that has a red artwork, you get a red background, you know, that kind of stuff. It seems like they're changing to a simpler black and white background and text all the time.
I want to throw out a weird theory about this black and white thing.
I know what you're going with.
You know where I'm going, don't you? I can feel it. So there has been a few like leaked black and white designs recently. Like,
yes.
I saw a story of Instagram trying out a new black and white design. iOS 10 might have some different design stuff going on here, which is focusing on black and white. I don't know why they would do this, but it seems super weird to me that Instagram would even consider doing this tested black and white design. And then there's rumors of Apple doing these black and white designs.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like there might be something, because if Apple's going to work with some companies, Instagram's going to be one of them.
Yeah. And, you know, black and white, when you flip it, it's easier to achieve a dark mode with more consistency.
It is, isn't it? And look, the idea of the general overall user interface isn't going to change, right? Because that is still consistent. But the idea of like this, all the blur and the taking the theme colors from the artwork, like that's all dead now. Like that's old. That's like many years old.
that's really been a problem also for the accessibility community. You know, when you have such low contrast between text and the translucent background fetched from the artwork, I think switching to a simpler, you know, here's the background, here's the text, and here's your artwork, and it's separate from the rest of the interface, I think it should bring more, you know, sort of clarity to the interface.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also interested in the functional changes. So 9to5 Mac has more details than Bloomberg. Bloomberg is all, yeah, there's going to be sweeping changes.
Well, because the Bloomberg story came from Apple PR and the 9to5 Mac story well, comes from leaks from Apple.
It seems likely, but, you know, giving them the benefit of the doubt. 9to5 Mac says there's going to be a simplification of the For You section. Connect is going to lose its dedicated tab at the bottom of the app, and it's going to be rolled into For You in what they call a demotion. So it sounds like a demotion, but also having it in the For You section should also give it more visibility, maybe? Because right now, you go to For You, you see no Connect stuff, mm-hmm. right? But there's a dedicated, you know, standalone Connect area. In the future, it sounds like you're going to lose the standalone Connect page, but you will get Connect recommendations in the yep. For You section.
Which, like if you imagine For You becoming more like a timeline, mm-hmm. so like here is a new artist we think you might like, and then here's something from Coldplay because you follow them, and here's a new playlist. Like, so it's less a static page that refreshes, but like a timeline of stuff that you go through. Like, that's how I imagine yeah. you could integrate those two things together. Mm-hmm. I saw a tweet the other day, and I wish I would have marked this down. About the For You recommendations, that apparently, like, it's really fundamentally built on the artist selections that you initially yes. make.
Yes.
And I hadn't realized this. So my thought was, the people that are complaining about the For You thing, redo the artist selection and maybe you'll get a better
results. I don't think you saw a tweet. I think you saw a link in my newsletter, Mike.
I saw a link in your newsletter. That's why I couldn't find it. Look at and that. I read it. See, I read it. I just don't remember where it
yeah,
comes from.
Yeah, nice. You're honest.
Club Mac stories, everyone.
Yeah, thank you. You know, what's my idea for improving For You? So can I tell you?
Yeah.
I suppose I can also tell Steven, although he's maybe sleeping at this point. Anyway, you there, buddy? Still there?
Still here.
Okay. So here's the thing. One of the things that annoy me about For You is that I always get stuff that I know. So artists that I know, albums that I know. And I know that that's because Apple is more skewed towards familiarity, maybe, than discovery of unknown bands, unknown EPs and singles. And I know that it's also heavily based on the initial selections that you do for the kind of music that you want to listen to, the artists that you like. What I would do is I would change that initial screen to have sort of like a slider that says, are you more interested in artists that you know or stuff you don't know?
Yeah.
So you yourself, at any point you can change it, can say, I want to discover new stuff, or I just want a stream of familiar content that I already know, but that maybe I haven't listened to in a while. I think Beats Music had this. But maybe I'm wrong, or maybe I've seen it somewhere else. But like a discovery toggle that you can say, because I can recognize how Discovery Weekly on Spotify is heavily skewed towards discovery of unknown bands. There's literally no band nor artist that I know in my Discovery Weekly.
See, I don't want either of those extremes. I want something that's closer to the middle.
Yeah, exactly. So I wouldn't mind to have a revised For You setting screen that you can easily open anytime. And you can say, look, this week I'm in the mood for something new, so give me something new. Or maybe in general, I want something in the middle. So stuff that I know, some stuff I don't know. Because right now it's all stuff that I know, and Spotify is all stuff that I don't know, which I can understand why for many people is maybe too much, because it feels like you're doing homework instead of listening to music. It's like, oh my God, I gotta learn all of these songs. So somewhere in the middle, a better For You section would be nice.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that completely, and I hope that that's part of what we're gonna see.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think of Connect?
I don't even use it.
Yeah, me neither. And I've seen so many artists like initially posting videos and like pictures and audio clips to Connect. Then it quickly grew into artists posting weird short links to their websites. And then now just nothing. A lot of people that I follow there, like bands that I follow there, don't post anymore. And I get the random picture every once in a while, and I just never open it.
I had a theory that like the music labels and Apple did a deal, and they, and like some of these artists and bands were contractually obliged to post things initially.
Probably.
Because why would they have been so excited about it? I don't know why you would be. It's why you get Drake on stage. I think all of this stuff is good. As I said, like, I use Apple Music, and ultimately I find it to be good. It's fine. It does what I need it to do. I would love it to be better on the Mac when I do play music on the Mac, because it's, it feels like Apple Music is fighting against iTunes. Like, when you do a search, it tries to search your existing library before it will search Apple Music, which doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you should just search the whole thing. If it really, you know, I know that this is what happened, but it really feels like Apple Music was kind of just squeezed in. And then part of the problem that I know a lot of people face on the iPhone is that basically Apple Music is squeezing out the local music collection. Like, if you don't subscribe to Apple Music, Apple is like, they basically spam you with sign up, sign up, sign up every time you open the app. So I think that could be better. Some people have suggested, and I think I saw John Gruber suggest this, like to make a separate app. I don't think that's a good idea, because what do you call them? What, music and Apple Music? Like, I don't think that works. But I think that there is, you know, if you're going to get rid of the Connect tab, I think you could have a tab for local music. If you know, people really want to do that, or you could just find a good way to mix them all together and kind of stop trying to push one out and keep one in. I think overall that these changes sound good, but they're not. I don't think it means that Apple Music is being, you know, smashed down to the ground and rebuilt. I really don't think that that's what's happening here. I think they're just making the changes that the users of Apple Music have wanted to see for a few months since it's changed, at least. And I really do think that like a lot of this stuff came out just because there was some bad press.
Yeah.
There was another piece of news about Apple Music, and this is a strange one, I think. Apple Music, you can now get a 50% discount if you're a student. And it, I think it kind of authenticates depending on the where you are, right?
I think it authenticates with an email address.
Okay, like an email address.
And it's I've seen someone say that it's even more restrictive than it should be.
That's not a surprise. It's a very strange one to me. Like, student pricing feels like a Microsoft 2003 thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but like, it just sounds strange to me now. Like, getting a student discount on software product feels very weird. Well, like, why Spotify are they doing this?
Spotify has it.
I'm not saying they don't. I'm sure many people do. It's just like, now in today's kind of like application economy, it just seems like it just sounds strange to my ears after, you know, so many years of seeing like Microsoft Office Student Edition, you know?
You know, because getting students with clear issues with cash on a monthly basis to sign up, and eventually the students grow up and get a job and they stay with your service and they stay with your platform. I think it's like one of those investments that you make to get people to use your service and to make sure that in the future even a tiny percentage of them stays with you.
Give it to them for free.
not for free, but you know, half the price because you're a student and because whatever reason, you know. It's, I mean, I understand why they do this. It's sort of weird to have like an educational discount in this modern age where it's like there's an app store and it's the same price for everyone. But I understand why, you know, Apple Music, the service, wants to offer this. Actually, I've seen a few people suggesting, could there be with the same system student discounts for the app store coming? And I've seen a few developers responding well to that on Twitter, saying, I would actually raise the price of my own apps if I were able to offer student discounts. You know, it's interesting to think about, to have like student pricing on the App Store.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of people say this. It's like, well, obviously there is some kind of authentication going on here. So it would be kind of cool if there was a way to bring this sort of stuff out to more people. I would like that.
Yeah, and Kyle in the chat room is saying that it's not just email authentication. It goes through his college web interface for, you know, saying, I am a student at this college. Yeah. So I think it's interesting. It makes sense. A bunch of other services have it. Spotify has it. And there's a big banner on the Spotify front page right now that says, if you're a student, get Spotify for $5 a month. I think it'll be interesting to see. I mean, there has to be some kind of App Store announcement at WWDC, right? Now, this is nothing. This has nothing to do with Apple Music, but there has to be some App Store changes coming, right?
Well, I mean, you'd expect it. There's some weirdness happening right now, right? Like, apps are getting accepted and put for review significantly faster, right? What's happening?
Faster than test flight, even approval. It's strange. And initially, I thought historically app review times were always lower in May, but I looked it up on a story that we had on the site a while ago, and it's never been under 48 hours or even 24 hours. It's always been around 7 to 9 days, yeah, around this time of the year. So there's something going on, like more staff, or Apple has a new app review policy we don't know about, but definitely 24 hours to get an app approved for the App Store, it's definitely new. And I'm seeing a lot of positive feedback from the developers, like they're really liking this. In fact, I'm not kidding, app review is faster at the moment for several apps than test flight beta approval. Which is crazy, because test flight is just for testers and app review is for the public App Store. But still, I wonder, it's been a rough year. It's been a rough couple of years for the App Store and the Mac App Store. And we've seen the executive shakeup, you know, Phil Schiller now in charge of the App Store. I do wonder if Apple has been preparing some, in that case, I'll allow it, some sweeping changes for the App Store. And we'll see those at WWDC. I don't know.
Yeah, this is an interesting kind of like story that nobody can do anything with, because no one's saying anything, right? Like Apple isn't saying anything about this. All we know is that the average review times are down to like 2 days for iOS and 1 day for the Mac, based from appreviewtimes.com. It's like, okay, this is crazy, but great.
Yeah, well, the thing that's interesting to me in all of that, like, we see this leading up WC most years. We can like see the ground shifting a little bit. And so you have things like the student pricing, you have things like, you know, review times coming down. Like something is coming, right? Like I always enjoy this part of the year because it's fun to try to read the tea leaves and see what's going on. But, you know, I think what underlies both of these stories is, you know, Apple's ongoing insistence that they're becoming a services company. Right, that was in the quarterly results. Tim Cook says it every interview he's on right now, of that services are an increasingly important part of Apple's business, and you can see that in their results. And so, if that is true, then they have to make these moves, right? They have to do things like increase the Apple Music user base, and I think a discount to college students is a pretty smart way of going about that. They have to make the App Store better for developers and users. They have to do things like maybe iCloud pricing adjustments, or up that free tier of storage, which if they don't do at WWDC, like everyone's going to be sad again. But I think this sort of stuff is going to be in the news more and more as Apple puts an increased emphasis on its various and sundry services that they offer.
I completely agree with you, because like they're also a service to the people that develop on their platforms, right? Like that's part of the whole service package, I guess.
There's a question that it's not about services and that we didn't discuss before, but it just came to mind and that I would like to ask you both, if you don't mind, which is, do you believe that fundamentally the changes that Apple could make for indie developers would matter to the general public or to Apple as a company? Do you believe that they care about what's better for indies when the App Store is making so much money with the big companies?
I think that there's a couple of parts to this. I think that indie developers have shown in the past and continue to advance and develop iOS apps in new and inventive ways, which filter out to the bigger companies, right? Like they help Apple kind of push and test things in ways that big companies won't because they can't. And I think it helps Apple grow their APIs and think differently about this sort of stuff. I also believe that any changes that they make for indie developers are going to find some way to help the bigger developers too. You know, like the reason that WWDC is an open event is because Apple believe in the community of independent app developers, because otherwise they could just do a video and just bring in, you know, King and EA. You know, they could just bring those people in. I think that they genuinely do believe in the independent developer because it helps them advance the platform, right? Like, you just know that everybody at Apple is using apps made by people like Underscore, right? They're just doing that because that's something that they do the same as we do. So I think that the people that help make these rules, they use these apps and want these apps to get better, and they know that one of the ways that they can make it better is by making it better for indies. That's how I feel, you know? And funnily enough, in parallel, I feel the same way about podcasting as well. There's been a whole big hullabaloo about all of this, you know? And Apple do help out the bigger players, but I genuinely believe that they care about the needs of people like me and you, because we'll help push the medium in new and different ways, the same as we always have done. And I think it, having the balance for making everyone happy, like the big players and the indies, means that they're going to get a better platform overall. And I think Apple know this.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think so.
So for that reason, it's interesting to me to kind of imagine what they're going to do and to see what they're going to do. Because like I see two approaches to the App Store. The romantic one, which is to care for the indies and to nurture the indies and to kind of make sort of like treating software development as kind of an artistic form and to enable the best possible environment for those creators, for those makers. And then I see the realistic approach, which is to just look at the money, to just look at the biggest names on the App Store and those big companies, what they need, and to kind of have features for those companies because those are driving sales and driving downloads. So it's definitely, when you think about it, it's a tough spot to be in, like to have the sort of idealistic approach and to be sort of romantic about software development and as an artistic endeavor, and to be realistic and look at the spreadsheets, look at the numbers and say, yeah, you know, people just want to play Clash of Clans. And so we're going to have features on the App Store for those people. I don't know what I would do. That's why I'm not an executive at Apple. But from the outside, it's fascinating, you know.
We're going to be talking about this more as we lead up to, because we are very close to WWDC now. We're a month away this week.
Yes.
So that's what you can expect from us. You can expect lots of this talk now. It is the most wonderful time of the year.
It is. Really.
It will be even more wonderful if you're wearing one of our t-shirts. Don't forget, go to our show notes, relay.fm/connected/90, and you'll find the link there to go and grab one of our fantastic t-shirts, our Rainbow Connected t-shirts. You can go to Teespring, search Rainbow Connected as well, and you'll find the campaign for you, either US or EU, but we suggest going to our show notes because you'll also find a bunch of other great links there. If you want to find Steven online, head to 512pixels.net. And he is at ISMH on Twitter. Federico is at Vitici, V-I-T-I-C-C-I. And he writes over at maxstories.net. And I am at iMike, I-M-Y-K-E. Check out Upgrade this week if you're interested in mine and Jason's thoughts about the New York Times Apple podcasting thing. We spend a bit of time talking about that. So I think that's interesting. It's interesting for us. If you find it interesting, then you might want to go and listen to that section. And we put chapter markers in it for your convenience, because some people won't want to listen to it and some people will only want to listen to it. So that is a good reason for a chapter marker. Thanks to Memories for sponsoring this week. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next time. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Arrivederci.
Adios.